Background. Greetings, every soul. This is Christopher Rudy for Cosmic Love, March 10th. And today I have two guests on with me. Patty Greer is a Crop Circles filmmaker who has made some extraordinary award-winning films on this out-of-this-world subject. And Jack Ellis is the author of Prophecy, Challenge, and Blessing, Visions of 2012 and The Shift, which is just full of native wisdom of indigenous cultures and what they're saying about this amazing time we live in. And he just got back recently from Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo, and he had some interesting experiences there. I guess, Jack, didn't you say there's about 10,000 people looking at the big shift and what it really means?
Well, I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with the LA Expo, but it really is a huge, huge event in terms of not only huge in terms of the numbers of people that that are attracted over a weekend beginning Friday afternoon and ending Sunday evening. There's about 10,000 people that make their way through there, and most of the there are a lot of really, really big name, you know, big names in the whole New Age scene. They're all there, you know, Greg Braden this year, Barbara Mark Hubbard, David Wilcock, George Nuri. I could go on, just the big name after big name. So it's really quite an event, and I think as far as events of that kind, I really think it's the it's the best that this country has to offer as far as the quality of it. So it's a big event.
And Patty, you just got back from the International UFO Congress.
I did.
And what was that like?
It's my favorite week of the year. I think it's the sixth time I've gone, and I usually show my movies there, and this year I showed my newest movie. And what an audience to be able to put your film in front of, or just to even walk by at the restaurant. I feel so honored to be a part of it, and at this point I'm like family with the people that are at the UFO conference. And like your friend, I mean, it's an honor, I think, just to be in a group of brilliant people. I love it. I just love it. And I've been to the Conscious Life Expo. It's wonderful bringing people together for the intention of raising our consciousness.
Oh, we'll probably be seeing YouTube videos coming out of both of those conventions over the next month or two, or at least I'm hoping so. You know, excerpts and highlights.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about, you know, both of your experiences and the phenomena. I was at one of the Conscious Life Expos here years ago, and I had a booth, and I remember it was just amazing for me to see the variety of people that are just, you know, on, so to speak, on the cutting edge, or really interested in the cutting edge of what's going on out there with, you know, the shift. And that's kind of the big buzz, you know. Here we are, 2012. Well, and I'm really fascinated with how all over the world the subject of UFOs, crop circles is going mainstream, but here in the United States it's still kind of, you know, the esoteric fringe. So I was wondering, Patty, if you could give some insight, a little bit more insight on your experiences there. And I really like that what you shared with me, that the one speaker was referring to, you know, planetary civilization BC and AD, you know, before contact and after disclosure.
Right. Do you know, I actually realized, because I took notes and I scribbled in my bureau in my manual about it, but it was before confirmation, which is an interesting, not contact.
Before confirmation.
Yeah, which is, I think, really more broad. And who did I watch today but one of the most amazing abduction stories? This guy in Denver, Stan Romanek, and video after video after video. It's so obvious to the people that know what's going on that we have so much interaction now with higher dimensional, other dimensional beings. And so many people are experiencing it. But I find that I forget when I'm around general public, which I try not to do that often because my brain is so wrapped around this subject now, especially going for a week with all the amazing people that are really pulling out the new information. And the Conscious Life Expo, you know, it's all about bringing us to this present moment rather than being sloppy. Like humanity, we've been lazy. We haven't been really with our finger on the pulse. And now, such as Thrive, I mean, they're just throwing it at you. And it starts out all spiritual soft, and then boom, there's all the dark stuff and the information and the ultimate message. And I think all of the teachers and speakers now, they're saying it's all about our thought. So the most important thing as public speakers is to not bring the consciousness into that place of fear anymore, because we've done that. They've played that card, and the most important thing is to raise the consciousness of large amounts of people now and to bring us all present rather than lazy. You know, we really have to come to now and be accountable.
Yeah, I really am. Like Jack's perspective on that, Jack's March newsletter, I put a link for that up on the Cosmic Love webpage and his recent video. And the video really struck me, Jack, the same subject of how we need to get out of, the our worst fears coming upon us like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And basically... And your words would be better this than my own. You know, the classic native wisdom perspective, and I love, Patty, the way you bring this through in a lot of your Crop Circles video, you know, the native wisdom. And Jack, the way you did that in your video and discussing this, I wonder if you could go into that a little bit more and your take on how indigenous cultures are looking at this big shift right now.
I would be happy to. First of all, it's probably important for anybody who listens to the message that I'm transmitting. My message has always been one that's been very powerfully influenced by the indigenous peoples. And in many ways, it hasn't been as much a function of research I've done or anything like that. And this is particularly true for my recent experiences. It's been more a function of, lately, my knowledge of this has been much more by direct experience, because I hooked up with a Mayan elder north of Mount Shasta at Deer Mountain, about an hour north of Mount Shasta, and I moved out here recently. I moved all the way from Wisconsin to Mount Shasta, not only so that I could be in Mount Shasta. I felt guided to this place for a very long time, that this is where I needed to be. But I also moved out here in order to be closer to my friend and my new ally, Tata Eric Gonzalez, who is a traditional Mayan elder, and he has a community that he has founded and led that's at Deer Mountain, about an hour north of Shasta. And for the last 3.5 years or so, I've been really immersing myself in his community and in his teachings and in the ceremonies, the traditional Mayan ceremonies that he's offering. So. My knowledge of this is really, it's much more as a function of direct experience than it is as a function of, you know, reading any books about it or anything like that. And so I guess that's important for people to know, you know, where I'm coming from on this. A couple of things that I noticed about the expo that kind of struck out to me was, one has to do with information overload. There is so much information right now on the shift that I really think... and Patty referred to the general public a minute ago, and I'm going to refer to the general public in the context of the general public of the New Age, you know, the New Age theme, which I think is what we see represented at an event like the LA Expo. And one of the things that I was struck by, and I think I've been struck by this for quite a while now, but it really kind of hit me at the Expo because of the magnitude of it, would be how much the average person knows about all this, knows about the shift in terms of, you know, all the various alignments and all the dates that we hear about and the prophecies that we hear about and the predictions that we hear about and all of the various alignments, all the Venus transits that are coming up and all of this stuff. There's so much information. And I was really struck by how much everybody knew about this. And yet, at the same time, how they really didn't know at this point what to do with it all. You know, they had all this information in their heads, but as far as what to do with it, it seemed like people were really kind of reaching out and grasping as far as that was concerned. In terms of so it's a lot of knowledge in the head, and maybe not as much knowledge as far as the practical application of this knowledge. And I think one of the things that I've noticed in my direct experience of the indigenous Mayan tradition, Mayan culture, is I've noticed how the way that the indigenous folks view this time of transformation is considerably different from the way that most of the white New Agers that I was meeting at the LA Expo and who knew so much about this and yet really didn't seem to be living it quite as much. And I think that's the direction that a lot of people needed more guidance with in terms of, you know, what do we do with all this?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite books. Is called "Stupid White Men."
Well, and that's kind of the way how I'm kind of seeing things, because I think, you know, white people really do. In many ways, we are kind of behind the eight ball as far as you know, having, you know, lost our connection with lost our connection with spirit and lost our connection with the web of life, and that's really, you know, what it's all about, is it not? So I do think that this is a time, and it's a wonderful opportunity exists nowadays, too, because so many of the traditional indigenous teachers, such as, you know, Tata Eric Gonzalez and so many of the other ones, Carlos Berrios, and there are a lot of Mayan elders, the Hunbots men and others who are stepping forward right now and who see this time as the time has come, you know, for them to share, you know, the ancient wisdom, you know, with white civilization. And they haven't always felt that way. You know, for many, many years, you know, up until maybe 10, 15 years ago, most of the elders were very secretive and very, very, you know, they guarded this information very carefully, and they really didn't think that the white folks were ready for it yet. You know, that the time hadn't come and that the white folks really weren't ready for it yet. And that certainly has changed in the last 10 years or so. Not only do they believe that the times are forcing them to share the ancient wisdom, but they also believe that, you know, many of us white folks, you know, we're ready at this point. We're ready to learn these things, so there's a wonderful opportunity exists for us, you know, to connect with this information firsthand. And there are differences. There is, and let me just point out two of the differences that I wrote about in my article that you're referring to, Christopher. One of the really important difference in how the indigenous folks, you know, see this monumental time of transformation that we're in the midst of compared to the New Agers, I couldn't help but be struck by how for so many of the New Age teachers seem to be falling into the trap, you know, that white civilization has fallen into, and that is understanding all of this in terms of that it's all about us. It's all about us, the human beings of, you know, the human beings of this planet. It's all about our personal empowerment. It's all about our health. It's all about manifesting prosperity and hard times and all those sorts of things. It always seems to come back to it's all about us. And there's a significant difference here between how the indigenous people see it. Because for the indigenous people, this isn't about us, not even a little bit is it about us. It's only secondarily is it about us as human beings. Because the focus for the indigenous people is completely upon our relationship, the relationship that we have, you know, with the web of life, which is not about us at all. It's about the web of life, and it's about
the web of life.
The web of life, and it's about us learning once again to serve the web of life, you know, to reconnect the spirit, to reconnect with the web of life, and to live a lifestyle which is dependent upon that. You know, not only with our thoughts, but also with our actions in terms of how we live. So a very, very important part of this is changing the way that we live, and changing the way that we live in a way that is more, you know, in harmony, you know, with the forces of nature and with what I refer to as the web of life, of which we are a very important part of the web of life, but we're only, you know, a part of it. We don't control it. It's not ours to rule and dominate and to call the shots. It's basically about us to reform, you know, our connections with it, and to serve it just like every other part of the web of life serves it. The web of life is all about this energy field that we human beings are a part of. And every part of this energy field, all the various elements and all the elementals, not only the physical aspects but the spiritual aspects of this web of life, They are all connected, and they all have a similar job. It's all of our jobs, you know, all of the different parts, all the different strands of this web. It is our job to share our energy with the web of life for the purpose of sustaining it, growing it, you know, being in harmony with it, making sure that this wonderful web of life flourishes.
No, this subject really fascinates me because it dovetails with what Westerners, David Wilcox in particular, has been coming around to and saying about what you refer to the web of life. He calls the source field.
Right.
And the source field investigations, this web of energy, this web of light, is, you know, the quantum field. And Patty has some really interesting experiences with, you know, orbs and the creation of crop circles, and which I think is, for Western civilization, you know, we're more left-brain oriented, whereas Eastern civilizations, indigenous cultures, are more right-brain intuitive oriented and more audio, you know, sound and frequency, whereas it's more visuals and images and structure and linear logic, you know, in Western civilization. And that that the Western science has come around to this understanding of the quantum field, you know, the source field, and quantum reality, energetics, and there's just a plethora, you know, massive amount of information coming out on all this. But the only way to really understand it and connect the dots is, you know, from a right brain perspective, you might say, you know, like the wholeness of, you know, what this all means with the web of life and connecting. And I think it's more like metaphor, you know, like of the web of life, the concept, and even the source field. It's a metaphor for, you know, connection with source. People, you know, and religious people, fundamentalists would say, you know, a connection with God, you know, and I mean, it's really saying the same thing in different ways. But energetically, I think there are so many different evolutions on the earth right now into so many different movements, and there's kind of an awakening going on within all of them, in a sense. And for me, connecting the dots between them, you know, East and West, and what's how it's understood in the different ways, how it's saying the same thing in different ways. And this, and one of the things to me that brings a lot of wow to the subject is what Patty's been doing with the crop circles and some amazing my discussion, Patty, with you this last week when you were talking about the creation of these fields and how they've been, it's been photographed, and the appearance of the orbs of light, which I understand carrying a certain intelligence. I mean, some of them have faces on them, and some of them are geometric thought form or geometric patterns, which are like a signature of a frequency of a consciousness. Or I mean, it's and how they appear over fields. Could you go into that a little bit, Patty? That your experience with that? Because I thought that would be another perspective on this that's really amazing to me.
When we look at the source field, or God, or other dimensional beings, is it possible that we could look at the crop circles, which I do, as the first physical manifestation of communications from another realm of reality? But it's actually for the first time coming into our realm of vision so that humans can physically see it. And so there, if perhaps it is true that the crop circles are coming from higher dimensional beings, which I totally believe they are, what we believe in the Crappie community is that the reason that they're laid down in sacred geometric patterns is because the human brain takes it in, consciously, subconsciously, looking at them. They're so beautiful, especially when you're realizing you're looking at wheat or barley and this beautiful, mathematical, perfect pattern. The other part of it is that the subconscious mind takes in the information that I believe these higher dimensional beings are trying to impart on humanity. It is surprising that most people say, oh, there's still crop circles. I mean, in England alone, there's 50 to 75 every summer, just in this area where I go in the summers and film these movies. But what's happening now is they're upping the game. And I think it's interesting how we called the Conscious Life Expo is more the New Agers. I agree with you. The UFO community are scientists and people that have had an experience. I mean, a lot of people, I do believe they're telling the truth, have had real experiences with other dimensional beings. The people that I interviewed for the movie I just made, and I was trying not to make a movie last summer. I had my camera, I had a man to carry it, but I really didn't want to make another movie. Everywhere I went, for some reason, and this is all over southern England, I met different people that told me that they were in a crop circle on July 29, 2010, and saw these orange balls of light up close and personal. And a few of these people saw illuminated light beings come out with arms, legs, and a head. Now, this is a story that's never been heard over there. But after I made the film, another woman I reached said, I was on the hill, I saw them too. And there's no doubt in my mind, these people, I don't believe they're making any of this up. Because the reason I go to this event, I'm stunned. And you can tell people that are infiltrators or jokesters, but most of the people are extremely serious that take the time to go out in the middle of the desert with 800 UFO people in one hotel. We don't have 10,000, but we have 800 to 1,000, and we hang together for a week, and that's heavy. I love
it. Yeah. Oh, there must be a lot of interesting story swapping going on there.
Well, it's interesting stories, but it's also a lot of confirmation, because you've got very much like the speakers at the Conscious Life Expo, the biggest UFO speakers in the world, get together and compare notes. I am not a speaker, I'm a filmmaker, and I've won a few awards, three EBE awards at their events in the film industry there. But the new film that I brought this time, in my opinion, we're seeing the balls. We're seeing a doorway where these light beings came out and people who experienced it. I think that we really are having a lot of interaction now because this is 2012. I think we're being upgraded. We have been for many years. But it's really happening now. And although it looks like 80% of the world is still asleep, they're not. And like the other gentleman said, you know, they have the information and it is an overload. But I think we're going to be assimilating it piece by piece, bit by bit, as it's needed. And people are, the whole planet is evolving. I believe it is. All of us.
Yeah, I'm seeing and hearing all kinds of manifestations of, thinning of the veil, accelerating change in terms of people's awareness of problem and solution. This Thrive movement has been an extraordinary phenomena in that regard, and has created a kind of a catalyst in a mainstream way to address core social, political, economic problems within the context of definitive solutions to those problems. That for a lot of people, you know, if they're thinking, the prevailing thinking is, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But when they start to wake up to, you know, how things have really been corrupted, our core institutions, and why, and then, you know, the logical, you know, extension of that is, well, what's the definitive, holistic, systemic solution? And I think that this awakening process is going on, I sometimes refer to as, it's not extrasensory perception, there's an effective sensory perception, where that which has been unconscious or veiled is becoming conscious. And this is people's worst fears as well as their greatest hopes. And I love your story, Jack, of the indigenous people in your video, where you're talking about the Hopi and that the reason that they chose a very stark climate, you know, in the Southwest to live is because there wasn't the attachments to the physical there, and you know, they, and you could explain this better, but that they were really into more of the spiritual path with all the physical, without all the physical encumbrances there in the desert. It reminded me of, you know, how Jesus was always, all the time heading out into the desert, you know, to fast and pray just to get away from people.
Well, the Hopi really believed that people, if we're not challenged, you know, that we tend to get lazy. and I think Patty referred earlier to, you know, to the tendency that we have to get lazy, that if we're not challenged, you know, that we tend to get lazy. The Hopi believe that, you know, the world has already been, you know, we're in the fourth world now, and the world's already been destroyed three times, and it's been destroyed three times because humanity has made the same mistake each time. They've become intoxicated with the enticements of the material world, you know, to the exclusion of their spirituality. So in order to, you know, in order to move forward and in order to create, you know, the new world that we have the opportunity to create, it's necessary to get that back into balance. In other words, that our spirituality once again needs to come first, and we need to recognize that everything that we manifest in the material world is, you know, manifest directly from our connection with spirit. So the Hopi really believed that it was necessary for them to challenge themselves in order to get the most out of themselves spiritually, and in order to fulfill their destiny as spiritual human beings.
One thing that fascinated me about their kivas and what they would do with the with sound and harmonics, and again, which is more right brain, and dealing with frequency. And meditation is a mediation with frequencies to go to higher dimensions. And that so many of their places in the Southwest that were, you know, the Anastasi that were abandoned. Some people say they ascended, but that had all these kivas, these circular spaces where they could do toning or invocations or, you know, with frequencies, the audio. That was like a dimensional shift, and that kind of fascinated me. And what you were saying about how that the world was destroyed before because this happened with materialism becoming in excess, you know, was anti-spiritual in a sense. Then that brings me to the question, and this is something a question I have for both Patty and you, Jack, is that it really, to me, this brings it to a point of choice, collective choice and collective conscience, that really there is either, you know, it's like, you know, we either awaken and harmonize and align, recalibrate, reboot, or somehow come into some kind of divine order in this 2012 year, or we're facing, what, the end of this, was this fourth world, and you know, with and then it's back to the point that to the extent that we do that, we can mitigate or prevent or at least mitigate your worst case scenarios, and that there is hope with this vision of a process that we may not even understand now in 2012, whereby what we're seeing in the crop circles goes mainstream with, I mean, people seeing more orbs and seeing spiritualization processes manifest in the physical and things happening that basically does an awakening that we never even considered possible. And this is something I'd like to see, that type of mitigation or prevention of worst case scenarios with some kind of mass awakening. So do you have any take on that, Patty?
I do. You know, number one, I would say between the three of us here, haven't we seen a lot of people leave the planet in the last 2 years? In the last year? Jack, have you seen people go?
I mean, I think... moving to the next world?
Moving to the next world. I've seen a lot of people or heard of a lot of people dying lately.
I'm ready to take whatever the next step is. I really don't feel like I'm going to be here very much longer, and I don't exactly know what that means. But whatever the next world is, I feel like I'm ready, and I feel like the time is very close. And it doesn't mean dying. It means just, you know, moving to the next world.
The end of the world as we've known it.
Right. Well, you know, the word apocalypse, actually, when it's translated, apocalypse means change. It doesn't mean disaster. It means change, and it also means through the veil, apocalypse.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's kind of interesting how misinformed we've become with the whole thought. And I think that the ripple effect of our personal feelings, each human is so important, even though we might not know it. that our energy ripples out from us. So if we can get the masses to feel good, then so many more people will, because it's a contagious thing. But if we have a fake alien, somebody does a holographic whatever, fake invasion or something, and, you know, everybody remembers the Hollywood image, it's so scary. You know, the wrong reaction might happen. Whereas if more honest movies got out that were made by real people having real experiences, laying in real prop circles rather than Hollywood, how can we sell tickets? The truth about a lot of the interaction with higher dimensional beings, and I begin my new movie by saying the elders were correct. So Jack, you and I are on the same, we're all, Chris, on the same wavelength of we know that there's great wisdom. We know that it's available to everyone, and I love it. You know, the three of us are on a mission. You know, we're out encouraging people to think positively. I'm knocking wood for Jack. You know, I'm so careful with what I say when I'm ready to see a ship or, you know, see what it's like on a ship or meet a little alien. I'm not really sure I'm ready for that. On the other hand, heck yeah, sign me up. You know, we want to see to believe. And I've been in 100 crop circles, so I know what's going on there in my heart. I've also seen the orange balls of light. In my opinion, I think that it's been one of the most amazing debunking gifts they've ever given the farmers. You know, people really don't get it, that there's still incredible crop circles every summer all over the world. And the man that I went and saw today, Stan Romanek, who's a very amazing public speaker, he said that all of a sudden he's getting these bizarre phone calls that are in binary code. And I said, how can you hear binary code? But he said they hooked up the phone, they got help, and they're deciphering it. And the interesting thing about this, and this is people that are having huge interactions with aliens with visible proof on camera and audio things that are amazing, but the new thing, he said, is they're sending binary code messages talking about the messages of the crop circles.
Really?
Yes, which really excites me because I believe it's true. So when you were talking about the Thrive movement, they really explained the crop circles. When you take them 3D, not just a flat pattern, but blow it up into a rounded ball, the sacred geometry then becomes like a torus equilibrium, an energy field that's complete all in itself right there. And they're saying that the crop circles are giving us messages, recipes, how to do free energy, how to do all these advanced technologies. All of the information that we need to really evolve is supposedly written in the crop circles.
I believe that. I've seen enough of, you know, watching your movies and following the evolution of crop circles from their original, you know, simple geometric forms and the evolution to fifth dimensional Euclidean mathematics, and then, I mean, and then other stuff with code, some of the crop circles with coded digital information, and
right.
The stories, you know, of in your movies of what has gone on with the evolution of crop. It's almost like the evolution of the archetypes of the collective unconscious, and it's fascinating to me how different people will look at crop circles. And they'll get different messages that geared to their own understanding or their own field of science that they're interested in, and
exactly.
That you know whether it be healing, healers get different messages. Astronomers get different messages. I mean, it's just fascinating to me how it's kind of an archetypal language. You know, and of course, I've always believed that geometric thought forms are like, you know, pure geometry and other and fractals and all these geometric coded informations are really like the higher language of mathematics mm-hmm. in frames of reference that are just beautiful at the same time, but have coded information that is coming through, I believe, it's always come through shamans and wise men and, you know, people who the veil was thin, you know, out-of-body experiences and, you know, bringing information from higher dimensions. But I think it's mainstreaming in all kinds of ways. Now, one of the most amazing ways to me is that the amount of information for anyone that's interested that can do knows how to do searches, and the YouTube videos that are coming out in all fields that are dealing with basically, you know, the, when I say the mysteries of God, it's the mysteries of this geometry, this geometrically ordered divinity, or God is the geometry of divinity, this order of the universe, the fractal universe, the information that's coming out of how it's all connected with this web of life, or the, this web of light. And I you know, I think there's a lot of people tuning in a lot of ways for me. Jack, your newsletter on dancing to the rhythm of life, I believe in that religiously. I don't have any circle things going on here with native elders that I can participate in, but I certainly go to Chico Hot Springs and dance until I almost drop. You know, country two-step swing. And to me, there's a thing like the twirling dervish and the spinning and the music and, you know, how it goes around in a circle. You know, and it's kind of a natural organic thing, and it's like in the northern hemisphere, water goes down a drain counterclockwise. And in the southern hemisphere, water goes down a drain clockwise spiral. Well, there's a natural thing with dancing and spinning, which is the counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere, and you can see it in the whole group will go, you know, naturally in that order. And people will spin, you know, when they spin, what feels natural doing counterclockwise spins when you twirl in the spins and the dances. I know this is kind of getting off the track, but I think there's just a lot of people that are trying to anchor inspiration in a lot of different ways right now, and there's the full range of stuff out there that anyone that's really seeking to understand this, and I think there's a lot of people that are just really with pure intention wanting to know what's going on.
Well, you know, your story about dancing, it really brings up probably the heaviest thing somebody said to me in a while, but the man I interviewed for the Four Stories movie said to me, and he's from Belgium. I interviewed him right after, in the morning after he'd had the sighting of those illuminated light beings and the orange balls. And when I talked to him now a year and a half later, I sent him a copy of the movie. He was so stunned, he said that he had almost forgotten the most amazing day of his life. And now every day I get these long emails from him, but he said, you have to call me. So I called him and he said, I realized that before you interviewed me, you came and woke me up at the camper van. I said, no, I never was up on the hill. He said, yeah, I remember you woke me up. And I said, no, that wasn't me. And he said, I was the only one that gave him an interview. So he called me the very next day, and he said, I finally put the whole puzzle together. And what he said was that he saw the most amazing thing, which was those light beings coming out of a ball over a crop circle. And he said, my eyes don't lie. I know what I saw. And the other guy was there with him. And other people were there on the hill. But he said later that he went to sleep and he had a dream of how they got in and out from our world to theirs, in and out. And it was through dancing into a state of bliss.
Really?
So when you were telling that dervish dancing, spinning, I realized, oh, my God, you're giving me the chills. And you're going, I don't know why I'm telling you this. These things, serious. I mean, all the things that work together like the puzzle. This is what he was describing. They showed him as how they get in and out between the worlds.
Wow.
And you know, I had a dream. Yeah, I mean, I think we've all have an idea, but I've been actually feeling it lately. So with Jack saying I'm kind of ready, we want to be careful how we, I guess I'm just kind of, because I feel like we're all dabbling so much now, we have to be really careful what we ask for.
Well, I know that the native cultures are really into the circle of life, you know, with the web of life, and with how they'd have their teepees in a circle. The teepee was a circle, right. And they would dance in the circle. And Jack, do they usually dance counterclockwise? In the northern hemisphere, do you notice that?
And at the ceremonies that I've, the Maya ceremonies that I've attended, all the movement around the circle is always done clockwise. Always.
It's done clockwise.
Everything moves clockwise around the circle, which is the same way in the northern hemisphere. It's the same direction that if we're facing the sun, it's the same as watching the how the sun moves through the sky.
Oh, that's interesting.
Uh huh. Well, it's one thing you guys are talking about dancing, and you're talking about reaching, you know, certain states of whatever we want to call it. We want to call it bliss, or we want to call it connection, or whatever we want to call it. Basically, that is the function of ceremony, basically, and that's one of the reasons why ceremony is probably the most important thing in the in the lifestyle of the indigenous people is ceremony. And ceremony is anything that we do, basically, that that connects us with spirit. And there's all kinds of different ways that we can do it. The way that I do it primarily is with prayer and is with singing and chanting and playing my singing bowls and my rattles and my drum and those sorts of things. But yes, that's something that raises the frequency of our vibration and gets us in the proper state of mind, state of being, state of our totality, body, mind, and spirit, where our frequency is raised and we're able to make these connections, these other dimensional connections with the spirit world, and it puts us in the proper state of mind, state of being, in which to live our lives. We should endeavor to always be living our lives in the same state of mind, state of being. The ceremony helps us to achieve. Whenever I experience my own ceremonies, I always say to myself, and the way that I close so many of my ceremonies is that I pray for guidance to be able to take this vibration, to take the vibration of this ceremony, to take the intent of this ceremony, to take it with me, outside the circle, and to take it with me, as I live my everyday life. This is how we should be endeavoring to live always. So, yeah, some very valuable lessons there.
Well, I think the dance is, with the movement of the body, and whether you're talking about a twirling dervish or whenever you're dancing and spinning, there's a thing about spinning, energy in motion or emotion, that there has to be a centering when you're spinning. And that centering process, I know when I was, a competition figure skater, my favorite thing was spinning. And that was kind of my formative years. I grew up on the ice because we had ice all year round in the town I lived in. And there was a thing about, I call it fire on ice. And there's that fire that, the more that you can be centered and connected while you're spinning and leaping and jumping, on ice, to me it's like a cellular memory thing. It's a crude version of that, when I go. I used to do ballroom dancing, and I used to love that, but I've, out here in the Wild West, we only have barroom dancing.
Right.
And I suppose if it was a higher frequency, we'd be doing it clockwise rather than counterclockwise. Yeah.
Yeah, counterclockwise does feel awkward in almost anything we do.
Generally,
we think in a clockwise manner automatically. It's like autopilot.
Well, I don't know. There was a guy that taught. He's like a dance whisperer, and he actually in the movie The Horse Whisperer with Robert Redford.
Right.
He was the one that actually taught the dancers in that scene in there where they had a country two-step. And I took a whole series of classes with him. I mean, he explained that the natural way to spin is counterclockwise, and he did the Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, and I never thought of it before, but all the dance moves that he was showing us, it was not natural to do it clockwise, but very natural to do it counterclockwise. And I don't know, maybe he was just editorializing about, in South America, that's more natural to do it the other way. I don't know. But anyway, that kind of always stuck with me. And I don't know if the Indian ceremonies, if they've always historically, have they always been clockwise, Jack?
I've heard that other traditions, do it in a counterclockwise, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the hemisphere. So I have heard that, but my own exposure is that it's all been
mostly
clockwise.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, all I know is that when I spinning on ice is one thing, and then of course that was always counterclockwise. On my left foot, but what's natural in one regard and what is natural in another context is a whole other thing. I think the whole thing is being centered and connected either way. The idea of keeping the sense of balance while you have the energy in motion, being centered and connected, and that's why I like the theme of your newsletter, dancing to the rhythm of life. You know, to me, life is the dance. You know, it's all the dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about harmonizing with natural forces, basically, and doing
yes.
it with our doing it not necessarily with our physical bodies, but doing it with our energy bodies.
And that kind of brings us to. I think, you know, the test that's best in 2012. You know, there's a lot of I think there's a lot of energy out there of real apprehension and not really expectation, anticipation of a big shift in a positive way with 2012. And I think that's part of the subconscious fear that's right under the surface with a lot of people, that they don't even want to go to the subject because they really don't see where it's going or how it's going to resolve. I think that's part of the dynamic where, you know, where faith and fear are like two sides of the same coin, and that we have to somehow, some kind of, you know, resolution or reconciliation. And
could I comment on that?
Yes, please do.
It's a huge topic. Well, one aspect of it is the fear aspect of it, which is an important aspect of it. And I think another thing that another way in which people differ as far as how they view these things, you said the thing earlier, Christopher, that was very true. And he said, ultimately, this all boils down to choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does boil down to choice. And the fundamental choice that we all are faced with, and there's going to come a time, I believe, in the very near future where this choice is going to be even more dramatic, you know, than it is now. The choice is between what world we want to live in. Do we want to live in a new paradigm world that is totally different, and I mean totally different, or do we want to make the choice, you know, to continue to try to, you know, prop up our old paradigm world and you know, try to limp along with that, you know, as well as we can, and, you know, keep all of our material stuff and kind of just keep everything the way it's going, and, you know, maybe we can, you know, plod along, you know, for a while longer with that. It all comes down to a choice of what world do we really want to live in? Do we want to live in a new paradigm world, or do we want to live in an old paradigm world? And again, for the indigenous, it's very clear. Our old paradigm world has got to be, you know, completely overhauled. You know, it's not a question of tweaking it here and there, and, you know, we'll get through and everything will be fine and everything will just, you know, continue kind of going the way it is. No, that's not the way they see it. They see the old paradigm world as a world that has basically been, you know, been plundering the earth for, you know, many, many thousands of years, endeavoring to, you know, to kill all the indigenous people and to eliminate their systems of spirituality. And this is a world that has definitely lost its connection with spirit, lost its connection with the web of life, and things really have to change very, very dramatically. And I believe that that's one of the primary things that frightens, you know, most people who have a real stake in this old paradigm world. You know, that's really the source of their fear, and we are definitely in the times ahead. We human beings are definitely going to be subjected to some very, very intense challenges. I personally am of the belief that our old paradigm world really can't hold up much longer, and when it finally goes, we are going to be, you know, confronted with some very intense challenges. The most important of which is whether or not we, once again, you know, can learn how to take care of ourselves again, you know, as opposed to having this system or this old paradigm world, you know, take care of us the way that it does. Basically, that's what it's all about. It's a dependency
yeah.
system, you know, that tells us, you know, that we're, you know, helpless victims and it needs us to do everything for us, you know, because we're not, you know, powerful enough or smart enough, you know, to know how to do those things for ourselves. And those are precisely the things that you know, that we're going to have to relearn how to do. We're going to have to relearn taking full responsibility for ourselves, taking care of ourselves on this earth, in this universe, as in growing our own food and finding our own sources of clean water and basically starting from scratch. And it all comes back to that. And people, as far as fear are concerned, people are just going to simply have to learn how to work through their fear. And essentially, it's always the case that when people are feeling, you know, intense feelings of fear, that always means the same thing. It means that their spirituality is out of whack. Because one of the most important things that we all learn on the spiritual path is that we learn that, you know, one of the most essential elements of the spiritual path is overcoming once and for all our fear of death. You know, a spiritual warrior is not afraid to die. A spiritual warrior is happy to die for what he believes in. you know, rather than, you know, living a wishy-washy life. And it always comes back to that. So our fear is a reflection of the fact that, you know, we're disconnected. And we're disconnected from spirit, and we're disconnected from the things that, you know, that allow us, you know, to trust life, you know, as opposed to being afraid of life. And to trust the fact, you know, that we have the capability to, you know, to once again to reassume complete responsibility as human beings, and to reassume our complete responsibility as, you know, as magical, as spiritual beings.
I think the pure intention of a lot of people is to understand how to do that. In other words, when I say that, you know,
the point I'm making, Christopher, though, is that it takes work.
It does take work.
And we have tools.
And that there are different. Of course, there's a thousand paths to the same mountaintop. But you know, the pure intention is, you know, to basically, you know, to even care. To change, or to begin the first steps and then the other steps, and I think for a lot of people, they're wanting to see how the trendings, you know, the direction, you know, I refer to a lot, you know, the shift from the internet to the internet, the web of life, the concept of the internet, and that there is, you know, there is an intelligence in the field, the source field. That's surging, and that there are ways to basically catch that wave or ride the wave, you know, culture that wave, you know, that attunement, realignment, recalibration, as Patty would say.
I love it.
And,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think, in my opinion, we have all the opportunities we have ever had on the planet. We have more now than ever before. To move into a higher spiritual energy in the bodies that we're in, and we have so much to learn. We have so much to focus on other than the stuff that's fading away now, and I think that a lot of the people in the world where I live are really reaching for the stars. We're really growing quickly. I find people are learning so much, so fast right now, that we're not thinking about the muck and mire. I mean, I used to be pretty affected, but it's not even important anymore. What's important is seeing our planet evolve. And they do say that the power of intention, if a small group of people get together and really put energy into some really positive or really dark intention, that it can affect thousands of people.
Yeah.
I mean, the source field, there we go again, the internet. It does spread out, but when you get a group of people together, which is happening more than ever now, people are realizing we need community.
Yeah.
People are realizing that the what we're seeing on TV is a circus. It's unnecessary, and it is collapsing. But I think that I've never seen so many people grow so fast as what's going on in general right now. I think it's a huge 2012 evolution of consciousness, and notice it or not, I think everybody's being affected and upgraded.
Well, I think this will be the year of choice. There's the opportunity for to come up higher or not. And it's the old people are waking. Some people are waking up to eternal contempt, you know, because they're finding out things that just really upset them, and other people are waking up to eternal salvation. You know, it's like self-elevation as salvation. They're catching the wave, and they're riding this wave. And the community building thing, the sense of not just virtual community or pseudo community, like we see in social networks, but you know, real community, and at least where people come together on a regular basis, like with congresses and conventions, and you know, can really share, you know, their experiences.
Right. Well, I'm going back to the Indians. You know, they live in real natural communities since the beginning of time. The Indians are the only ones that seem to have carried through probably what we're going to be moving back into, and the new paradigm is much more simple living. And I think most people have been stripped of lots of their wealth and stuff and things, and you fight it at first, and then you kind of go, you know, it feels better to have less. I think a lot of people have been broken in slowly but surely. I think everybody's pretty much felt the pinch by now, and we're all living, many of us are living smaller intentionally. And like I said, the Indians, though, they've got it down. If they're really still doing the tribes and the simple living and the sharing water and cooking together, you know, they're showing us how to do it. They're setting an example.
We need to do a wrap here in a few minutes. Jack, could you finish up with your perspective on this community building process, what you're doing within, with the community in Shasta in South America?
Well, well, I can only reiterate, you know, what I'm hearing from you guys. You know, we cannot do this alone. You know, we must do this in the form of communities. And I also agree with what Patty just said in regards to, I believe this all starts very, very grassroots, and I believe it also starts very much in a very earthy way in terms of small communities who, you know, once again learn how to live, you know, in harmony with the earth. And, it, you know, it boils down to things like growing food and having a clean source of water and having being able to have alternative sources of energy, you know, other than just, you know, making fires with wood and stuff like that. I really do believe that's where it begins. And yeah, we cannot do this alone. And when you look at the actual metaphysics, I'm in the process of learning the Mayan Daylord system for the first time in my life. And it's amazing how many of the Daylords, maybe 5 of the 20 Daylords, are all about community, and it's all about the lessons that we learn in community. And how when, you know, human beings stray from the community, it's much like a wolf out in the wilderness who strays from the pack. You know, a wolf out in the wilderness who strays from the pack is going to die. A dolphin in the sea who strays from the pod is going to die. And it's basically the same way with us as humans, that we cannot do it alone. We have to be connected. And that's where it starts, grassroots and getting back to the, you know, the nuts and bolts of it all.
Well, both of you, Patty and Jack, I can't thank you enough. This was really fun today, and I'd really like to do this again. There's a unique synergy with this. The timing was ideal with your recent experiences that you could share with everyone. And I want to thank everyone for listening, Cosmic Love today, and I'll be back in a couple weeks. And Jack, Patty, thanks again, and see you on those cosmic highways.